Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hi, I'm Beda Hill, and this is the D Word Podcast, where we talk dementia. Glad to have you company for another D Word Podcast. A few weeks ago, I had the pleasure of appearing on All Home Care Matters, along with the podcast host, Lance A. Slatton. It was a great experience, and immediately made me want to invite Lance on to the D Word. As well as being the anchor man for All Home Care Matters, he's also senior case manager for Enrich Life Home Care Services, and was recently named in the New York City Journal in their 50 Under 50s list, which recognises outstanding trailblazers under 50 years of age.
Yeah, well, first, thank you, Pete. We appreciate you and the tremendous work that the D Word is doing and all the advocacy you're doing for families and carers and caregivers that are caring for loved ones with dementia. We all know exactly what that entails and how difficult it is. We have a heart and a passion for helping as well. And our family owns a home care company here in the United States in Michigan. And part of the work we would do, we'd call it really a ministry. Aside from going out and helping these families, we would go and do caregiver support groups all over the state, educational talks, dementia conferences, and then just fun activities and events. And as we all know, COVID started changing the way a lot of us went about our day-to-day lives. And so all of those extracurricular activities stopped, even though our company was still operating as essential business. It just changed how we did things. And one night I actually was out at the track getting some exercise after my kids had went to bed, and I heard a podcast, and I was listening to this podcast, and it wasn't the greatest content. It wasn't the greatest production. And it got me thinking. I said, you know, why don't we start a podcast? And so I went home, I talked with my wife, and she said, well, what do you know about starting a podcast? I said, absolutely nothing. I said, but I'm willing to learn and I want to research it. And so we spent several months actually researching podcasts. And one, you know, is there room for another podcast that would do kind of what we wanted to do? And, you know, we quickly discovered there's some wonderful podcasts out there, but we don't want to specialize in just one specific issue, illness, or specialty. We wanted to kind of have a broad general podcast. And so I took some classes for a few months with a Hall of Fame broadcaster, and we launched All Home Care Matters in May of 2020, and here we are today talking to you.
Yeah, no, congratulations. I mean, I'm approaching 200 shows. You've done 250 podcasts since then, haven't you?
Yes, we have. Yeah, it's a lot of fun, though.
It is a lot of fun. And I think, you know, we come from very, very similar backgrounds in that respect, in that, you know, I wondered, you know, what does it really take to do podcasts, radio show and whatever? And, you know, you have to have the idea and you have to go for it. And, you know, that's exactly what you've done. And also the title. I really like the title, All the Home Care Matters, because I think it implies that society still thinks that home carers don't matter, which is really sad.
Yes, exactly. You know, so the title actually, Pete, has two meanings for us. One is all home care matters. Like you just said, it does matter. It played such a vital role during COVID. And in fact, many families who weren't really even aware of what home care was or that it was even a thing have now discovered this great option for their loved ones to be able to stay in their home. Or, you know, we have many families who are in residential facilities, assisted living, all kinds of places who still retain our services because they identified, you know, my mom, my dad, or my husband, whoever their loved one happens to be, they're not getting the attention and the care that they really would like to see them get because they're one of many people. And there's usually one or two aides that are taking care of, you know, 16 up to 30 people at a time. how is that really providing quality, compassionate, supportive care? You can't. I mean, a lot of our staff have actually told us who had worked in these facilities prior to working for our company. They said, you know, I got into this industry. I got into this because I want to help. I want to make a difference. But I feel like I'm on a factory line in an assembly plant when I'm working in these facilities, because we're giving quotas, we're giving a checklist, and we're giving all these room numbers that we have to have all these things done by the end of our shift. And it's impossible to sit there and hold somebody's hand or put your arm around them or listen to them tell you a new story about what one of their grandchildren have done. And that's not why I got into this. You know, I got into this to really make an impactful difference. And, you know, they said home care is just the best way to do that, because you get to spend all that time with that person. And the second meaning for the name All Home Care Matters is, you know, home care, we see all kinds of issues, all kinds of situations, from, you know, paralysis to, you know, amputees to, you know, traumatic brain injuries, you know, to advanced dementia, early onset dementia, or just, you know, old age issues. And, you know, there's not one single thing that home care just specializes in. We take care of all kinds of issues. And so All Home Care Matters means we're dealing with all the matters that home care comes into contact with.
Yeah, and I think it's very important to highlight those issues. And I guess during COVID, I mean, a lot of carers said to me during COVID, because we had lockdowns, we couldn't go out and various things. Right. But, you know, people might begin to realize what it's like now, because even those people who aren't carers can't go out of their own home, can't do all the things they normally did. But sadly, it seems that COVID goes away and suddenly we revert back to normal again.
Right. Yes. Yeah. You know, I have talked to so many people in facilities, in hospital, in home care, in, you know, those frontline workers. Yes. You know, your nurses, your doctors, your infectious disease experts, all these people played such a vital, crucial role during COVID. But these, I call them the frontline heroes. These caregivers, these CNAs, these home health aides, you know, they're the ones keeping their loved ones and their clients or whoever they may be safe and protected. You know, we had a lady during COVID. If we weren't able to operate, you know, she would have passed away. You know, our staff is with this particular lady 24/7. And, you know, the staff were right there with her. And she started having an active stroke right in front of them. And it's because they were able to continue working in the setting. They initiated 911 here in the States and then got the ambulance there. And they call it the golden hour rule. We caught this stroke so early that they were able to reverse the effects. And another lady, actually, her health started declining. And so the staff identified this and they took her to the emergency room. They had to actually, you know, still at this time, they had to wait in the waiting area. The lady went back, she was tested for COVID, and she came back positive. So the doctor came out to talk to our staff, and they said, I would really like to send her home. Is this possible? The last place we want to see her at is in a hospital, even though she has COVID, because it's going to lead to all these other issues. Plus, she had dementia. So now she's in these unfamiliar surroundings, which is going to cause a decline. And so the doctor said, no. Home care and having you guys with her to support her and, you know, provide her care, that is the best possible thing for this woman or anybody, you know, in this situation. And, you know, now it's almost like we forgot about all these heroes during that time frame. And now it's just relegated back to, you know, you're the low man on the totem pole, so you're not as important.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
This is the D Word podcast with my guest Lance A. Slatten. You know, I've been thinking, you know, the people with their hands on the purse strings, world runs with money, politicians have made the decisions. Here in the UK, a few years ago, we used to have a TV show which was called Back to the Floor. And basically what it meant is the chief executive of McDonald's, for example, spent a day flipping burgers. at the local McDonald's. And I just had this concept. It came to me today, actually, that this would be a brilliant concept to get a politician, get them into some home care and say, look, this is what you have to do for a day.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I'd even say we could branch off on that. And, you know, these hospital administrators, these doctors who, you know, quote unquote, don't get their hands dirty, you know, make them be the caregiver for some one of their patients who has a dementia or, you know, a significant health issue, you know, help change them, help toilet them, help bathe them, help feed them, you know, and I think it would give them a greater renewed appreciation for, you know, what their patients go through first and foremost, but also what the staff is doing to provide care for these people.
Yeah, you know, I know we've had this discussion a little bit on your own podcast in terms of this medical model that we tend to go down, which concentrates on the patient, which is all right and good to solve whatever medical problem they've got, but tends to ignore the whole social aspects of the carers and the family who are behind that patient and are every bit as affected as they are.
Yes, yes, 100%. Absolutely, Pete.
And I think it's, you know, that's an area that we need looking at. I mean, I'm interested, obviously, here we're a small country in the UK, and we still have significant differences between what we call, you would call them zip codes, I guess, we call postcode areas. But in a country like the States, you've got 50 separate states who are all operating, it seems, in a sort of slightly different way. And how do you get any consistency in terms of care?
Yeah, well, so I will say, my friends in the UK, you may be small, but you're mighty. We love our friends in the UK. And for the United States, you know, we have Medicare, which is ran by the federal government. So Medicare applies to all 50 states, regardless of what state you live in. Where it gets a little trickier is when you start talking about Medicaid. Medicaid is more for impoverished or you can't financially, let's say you had to go into my own father had a great career, had a great pension. When it became unattainable for him to be in the home any longer, we kept him there at the very last moment when we just could not, because he required more therapeutic clinical support than what we can provide in the home. He had a great pension. And even with that great pension, he had to go into Medicaid. And so then Medicaid in Michigan allowed him for $60 a month. So this great pension he worked his whole life for, all of that now goes to the state of Michigan, and they give him a $60 allowance to, quote unquote, survive on for a month. $60 is not going to, I mean, you can't take a family of five out to dinner for $60, you know? And so every state has different rules and regulations. I can really only speak to Michigan, but one of the big differences that I can speak to is the fact that home care, which is, you know, a lot of people confuse with home health care. Home health care will be paid for by Medicare. You get 9 weeks at a time, but where they get confused in, it doesn't mean you're going to get 24-hour care in your home through Medicare. Medicare will send a nurse, a physical therapist, occupational therapist, social worker, if these things are needed, and they'll be there for 45 minutes and then they leave. There's only certain things they will do. It's for a skilled need. Home care, we will provide all the support you need up to requiring a registered nurse. Medicare will not pay for that. Now, what I'm very passionate about, Michigan is what is called a non-licensed state for home care. What does that mean? It means, Pete, you could come here on vacation or holiday and say, I'm going to live here for a while, and you could start a home care company, buy a business license, get a tax ID number. Nobody's going to stop you or question you. That's the concerning part. So there's several states in the country here in the U.S. that are non-licensed. That just means anybody can open a home care company. They can hire and operate pretty much however they want within normal, you know, laws of the land, but there's no government regulation or oversight. Now, if we go to our friends in Illinois, the home care industry there is regulated by the state of Illinois. So they have certain guidelines, there's registries that they have to hire from, all these different things. It's a lot more sound and a lot more, regulated. And I really think it's more protective of these families who don't know any different. Because the average person, if I go into my doctor's office, Pete, I'm not going to ask the doctor, are you licensed? You know, do you have insurance? You go in there in good faith, assuming they're open, they're in business, they must be doing everything right. You don't know what you don't know. So, you know, I'm a big proponent of we're wanting to see our state and eventually the entire country, any states that aren't, to become licensed. Because at the end of the day, it's not really a great benefit for us per se, but I'm thinking about all these families that we've come into contact with who have hired other people before they get to us. And they said, well, they said they were a company, but it's a sister and her best friend or something, you know, and they're just calling themselves a company. You know, what if that person injures themselves taking care of your mom or dad or you? Now they're going to turn around and try to sue you. You know, do they have workman's compensation, you know, which is, again, a law for a business? What if that person gets sick and you need to be at work, or you had an important doctor's appointment you had to get to that took you 6 months to get scheduled? Well, now that person's sick. Who do you fall back on? They don't have any other staff that they can say, okay, we're sending a replacement. You know, there's all these little things that families aren't thinking of, and nor would I if I was in their situation. When you're in a sense of panic and you need help, you're looking for the first person that says, yes, I can help you.
I mean, it's so complicated, right? Isn't it? At a time when you're concentrated on your loved one. And I had a lovely lady, Agnes Houston, who was on the show last week, actually. And Agnes said, isn't it strange that a time when people consider that my cognitive abilities are failing, they give me and my relatives one of the biggest forms I've ever seen to actually fill in and tell them that my cognitive abilities are failing. And it seems to be just all these things which are lumped onto carers when, you know, they've got so much to think about.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I say all the time, you know, caregiving is one of the hardest jobs that there is. You know, it affects, you know, think about your job or my job. We go to our job, we go home at the end of the day. A lot of us leave our jobs at work until we go back the next day. When you're a family care or a caregiver, you know, it's touching you emotionally, it's touching you physically, it's touching you financially. And, you know, you're also dealing with, we just posted something on our social media. One of the most difficult and hidden things of being a family caregiver is that anticipatory grief. You know, every day you go to your mom, your dad, your spouse, sometimes your child, you know, you're mourning that person while they're still alive because you're mourning what is to come. And, you know, that is something I don't think it's talked about often enough, because, you know, a lot of times they're suffering and dealing with that alone. And, you know, you can't talk to your best friend about it if they haven't gone through it. They can be there, they can support you. But, you know, just like if you have a major surgery or you just got diagnosed with a terrible illness, you can talk to your friends and your family, but they can only sympathize and understand to a point. Unless they've gone through what you're going through or have what you have, you know, they can't truly get it. And I think that's one of the hardest things for family carers and caregivers is, you know, Pete, we had a lady come to one of our caregiver support groups. And I tell this story often because it just was so devastating to see this woman. She was in her probably late 50s. Her husband had just recently, 3-4 months prior, been diagnosed with early onset. And, you know, the first meeting she came to, she just sat there very stoic and just listening. And that's fine. Nobody has to talk. And the next time she came back, she came in and, I mean, her eyes were red. She had Kleenex and she's wiping her tears. And, you know, I just kind of asked her, I said, do you mind me asking what's the matter? And she said, well, you know, I'm dealing with the loss essentially of my husband, right? Because of the early onset. She goes, and now I'm dealing with the loss of my lifelong friend of, you know, 45 plus years since they were little kids. And I said, well, what do you mean by that? She said, well, we all went to high school together. We all married our high school sweethearts and we've just stayed close throughout our lives. And every Friday or Saturday, we would go out together for dinner and a movie and just hang out and have company together. And the last 3-4 times, she says, I've had to cancel on my friend. And because my husband's condition is just really bad and, you know, it's getting to the point where she doesn't know what she's going to do. And her friends basically said, well, you know, if you don't have time for us anymore, why don't you just say so? You know, I don't, you know, basically she broke up, you know, with her friend. And she goes, but I'm trying to tell her what I'm dealing with. I said, listen, I know this isn't going to really make you feel better. It's not going to solve it. but it will give you some perspective. I said, for a moment, put yourself in your friend's situation. You know, she looks at your husband. He looks fine, right? Because dementia is really a blind illness. You can't see it. And you guys always go out together. Now you're canceling. She can't understand what you're going through. She has no way of understanding it. You can try to explain it all you want, but fortunately, your friend and her husband, they haven't had to experience or go through this, and hopefully they never will, but she's trying to understand what you're going through when it's impossible. So she is going to be angry. She's going to think, well, are you mad at me? And that's not going to change until she can really appreciate and understand what you're dealing with, or she has to experience it herself, and hopefully she never will. She's not going to understand. You can't make somebody understand something that they've never been a part of or don't know. I mean, it's hard to get doctors and nurses at times to even understand what these families are going through with their loved ones.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there is the power of, you know, trying to get people together who have right. experience and can talk to each other. And I wholeheartedly agree with the fact that unless you've been through it, right. you cannot fully appreciate. And it's interesting because, you know, people come on the show here on the D Word. I do the show, and afterwards people say, oh, you must be an expert now because you've done, you know, 190 episodes or whatever. And I say, no way, because I will never be an expert right. because the experts are people living with dementia. I'm not going through that. They're going through that. Right. You know, I can appreciate a part of it, but there's no way I can appreciate the whole story. I want to talk about something that I found on your website about the carers crisis in the US that I've been looking at, and some statistics. I mean, 62% of people needing care are concerned they won't be able to stay in their own homes. And yet the number of unfilled care jobs sits at 1.8 million. Those two just don't mix, do they?
No, they don't. I will tell you, Pete. So, you know, I mentioned my day job. I'm a senior case manager for our family business, and we cover the bottom half of Michigan, which is a large amount of land. And, you know, it's not just our company. It's the hospitals. It's the banks. It's the grocery stores. Everywhere you turn, at least in our area, there are help wanted signs. Help wanted, help wanted. I know one of our favorite little diners here in the town, they've done away with dinner hours. They are closed on Sundays. It is devastating. And what, you know, the one that affects us the most is obviously the caregiver crisis. And that's because all of a sudden, you know, there's just a missing, you know, portion of this whole work industry that used to be there is no longer there. And we don't know. I don't have the answer. I don't think anybody has the answer. I think everybody's trying to figure it out. You know, first there was the great, what they call it, the great awakening or the great quitting or something they call it. There was some little catchy name where people decided, you know what, I'm just going to stay home. I don't want to have to pay for childcare, the gas, you know, getting lunch, you know, all this. I'm going to be far better off just staying in my home with no money coming in versus the money I would make and the money I would have to put out to have a job. And I think also part of it too is people got used to a little bit of staying home during COVID. They at least here in the States, there was a lot of benefits to stay if you couldn't work due to COVID. You know, that is one thing we're very thankful and grateful for. Our company did not suffer any losses because of COVID as far as employees. I know other companies in the home care industry in our area, they lost a lot of their roster of, you know, staff, a lot of their employees, because it was very easy to stay home and get these COVID relief checks. Well, that money ran out. And my only guess, and it's a very amateur, unprofessional guess, is, and not just for home care or caregivers, but just for the workforce in general, people got so accustomed to staying home, the ones that did, or the ones where the businesses closed down because they weren't essential, that it's hard for them to now gear back up and get back into the workforce. But I don't know the answer, but it is a very serious crisis. I know one of the major healthcare systems here in the state of Michigan that we work with regularly, they're posted over 600 open positions for their healthcare system. They've cut back or eliminated elective surgeries, ones that you volunteer for. They're not life-threatening or urgent. They've closed those entirely because they need the surgeons to go now and work in the area where they are urgent surgeries. You know, they've closed a lot of our local hospitals, have closed down emergency rooms, and they're just funneling them up to the bigger hospitals. I mean, it's everywhere. And I wish we had an answer. I wish I knew where this ended at. But so far, I haven't seen any hope that it's getting better.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
You're in tune with the D Word Podcast, one of many great podcasts from UK Health Radio. Here in the UK, we have a crisis in the NHS. People are being pushed more and more to telephone support, to internet support. GBs were criticising the papers here just a couple of days ago of having fewer and fewer face-to-face consultations, which... You know, some of these things for some people may work. Obviously, I'm looking at people living with dementia. And I think the worst thing you can do for people living with dementia is cut them off from face-to-face contact. And yet, sadly, that seems to be the way the world's going at the moment.
Yeah. Why do you think that is, Pete?
Again, it's social interaction, I think, is a massive thing in terms of dementia. I've seen it. When I used to run my clubs for the Alzheimer's Society, people used to say, oh, it's great. And the one thing they also used to say, going back to what we were discussing just a couple of moments ago, I said to someone, you know, why do you like this? I said, well, hey, we're all in the same boat. This is great. I can talk to people about why I'm going through, and they fully understand it because they're the same as me. Right. And that was a real learner there as well for me. And like you, I don't know what the answer is going to be. But I think all we can do is just do our best to highlight the issues. And I still think that going back to what we were saying even earlier in the conversation, a lot of the politicians still just don't understand the issues.
Yeah. Yeah. I've often thought or think, I should say, that it might take one of these politicians or people in higher authority, kind of like going back to the doctor, spending the time doing the hands-on day-to-day with his patients. It's going to take politicians to be, and we talked about this when you were on our show. I don't want to see it, but I would like to see if things would change if a politician who is in authority, in power right now, if one of their close loved ones ended up getting this diagnosis. And I know you said in the UK, a couple of the prime ministers, you know, I know Prime Minister Thatcher, but it didn't seem to change for you guys. So I don't know if that would change. And of course we had President Reagan, but that was really came out more post office. But I think at least it gave a little spark to, you know, let's try to come up with solutions. And I think also you have all these wonderful, tremendous organizations doing all this remarkable work. But again, like we talked about when you were with us on our show, it seems like they're all staying in their own silo. You know, they're not connecting and making those, you know, alliances where I feel like they would get more done and they'd be more effective if they were united rather than divided.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I know you get a number on your show. We get a number on our show. And the one big thing is some consistency and ability to talk together. One of the other things we have here in the UK, which doesn't seem to be used, the way it should do, is the concept of social prescribing. So you can go to a doctor and, for example, the doctor could prescribe, well, here's some respite care for you as a carer. You have that respite care so you don't burn out, so therefore you don't need to use the health service as much as you would have done. But the reaction in this country has been very varied because a lot of people have said, well, you know, why are doctors prescribing people days out and things like that? And it's not a concept that's fully understood, but I think it's one that could at least drag the medical and social models a little further together.
Yeah, no, I agree. I know... here in the States, and I don't know about in the UK, with hospice. If your loved one is under hospice care, you know, you can get respite for yourself. And what the respite is if your loved one is in home, you know, some of these hospice facilities, even some of the hospitals, they'll have like hospice designated rooms. Your loved one could go in there for, you know, 2 days, 3 days, maybe 5 days, whatever it may be, to give the carer and the caregiver a break who's caring for them day in and day out. But my question to that is, well, why should it just be for hospice? You know, what if I'm taking care of my grandmother or my mother and it's advanced dementia and I had her move in with me? I'm trying to raise children still and I'm trying to work still. And I'm also caring for her 24/7. She can't be left alone. Should I not also have the ability to get that respite break? Because again, I think then you get into the financials and the economy. You know, if I don't go into work, now my employer's numbers are going to go down. You know, I mean, I think it's a snowball effect, a chain reaction across the board that doesn't leave out any sector of our societies.
Well, I think it's joining the dots, isn't it? As you just said, it's a chain reaction, but it needs those people to join those dots together and realize, you know, what is happening. Sadly, I think time is bringing us to a bit of a close. I'll tell you what, a big load of notes on the left-hand side. I haven't used any of them. So we're going to have to get back on and talk again. I mean, just, you know, a big question. You know, what advances would you like to see in the care system in the next 5 years, say?
Great question, Pete. And first, I want to thank you for your time and your friendship and all the great work that you're doing there at the D Word on UK Health Radio. Thank you so much for this opportunity. It's been great. And I know we'll talk again in the future. If I was running the world for the day, first thing I would do is I would recognize social care as a part of healthcare. No questions. It would be definitive. It's just as important as going to get your immunizations when you're a child. I would also recognize caregivers, family caregivers, and paid caregivers as an integral part and force in the healthcare industry. And just like I mentioned here in Michigan, home care does not fall under healthcare at all, you know, and they call it non-skilled. Well, you and I both know there's a tremendous amount of skill involved when you're identifying a stroke and saving somebody, when you're helping to, you know, make sure the person you're caring for has the proper PPEs and they're isolating during, you know, this pandemic of COVID. I think there just needs to be a more uniform view on social care and on what these family caregivers go through and do day in and day out for the loved ones that they're caring for and for the professional caregivers.
Well, that's a world I'd like to be in and a world I'd like to work towards. You're doing a great job. Please keep doing what you're doing. We'll keep doing what we do. And hopefully all those small organizations as well that are doing a marvelous job wherever they are in the world. And eventually we're going to break through and eventually it's going to happen.
Yes, it is. Keep doing what you're doing, Pete. We need you.
Thanks, Lance. Been a pleasure.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much to Lance for a great chat. Although sadly we didn't get time to get onto football and baseball. Do take a look at allhomecarematters.com. There are over 200 podcasts and videos and some other great resources there. Well, that's all we have time for on this edition. Thanks for joining me, and I hope you'll come back soon for another D Word podcast.